tasmin vinihate yuyam tejo srayudha sampada bhuya prapsyata padram vo na imshanti mat paran. You missed that shot, right? Tasmin vinihate yuyam tejo shrayuta sampada bhuya prapsyata padram vo nam him shanti chamat paran tasmin vinihate yuyam tejo shrayuta sampada bhuyah prapsyata padram vo nahim shanti chamat paran. Tasmin, when he, Dhritarasura, vinihate, is killed, yuyam, all of you, teja, power, astra, arrows, ayudha, other weapons, sampada, and opulence, bhuya, again, prapsyata will obtain bhadram, all good fortune, vaha, unto you, na, not, himshanti, hurt, cha, also, matparan, my devotees. Okay, text 53. Dadyansha's invincible protective covering, known as the Narayana Kavacha, was given to Tvashta, who delivered to his son, Vishwarupa, from whom you have received it. Because of this Narayana Kavacha, Dadichi's body is now very strong. You should therefore beg him for his body. When the Ashwini Kumaras beg for Dadyancha's body on your behalf, he will surely give it because of affection. Do not doubt this, for Dadyancha is very experienced in religious understanding. When Dadyancha awards you his body, Vishwakarma will prepare a thunderbolt from his bones. This thunderbolt will certainly kill Dhritarasura because it will be invested with my power. When Dhritarasura is killed because of my spiritual strength, you will regain your strength, weapons, and wealth. Thus it will be all good fortune for all of you. Although Dhritarasura can destroy all the three worlds, do not fear that he will harm you. He is also a devotee and will never be envious of you. Purport. A devotee of the Lord is never envious of anyone. What to speak of other devotees? As revealed later, Dhritarasura was also a devotee. Therefore, he was not expected to be envious of the demigods. Indeed, of his own accord, he will try to benefit the demigods. A devotee does not hesitate to give up his own body for a better cause. Chanakya Pandit said, San nimite varam tyago vinashe niyate sati. After all one's material possessions, including his body, will be destroyed in due course of time. Therefore, if the body and other possessions can be utilized for a better cause, a devotee never hesitates to give up even his own body. Because Lord Vishnu wanted to save the demigods, Dhritarasura, even though able to swallow the three worlds, would agree to be killed by the demigods. For a devotee, there is no difference between living and dying, because in this life, a devotee engages in devotional service, and after giving up his body, he engages in the same service in the spiritual world. His devotional service is never hindered. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the ninth chapter, sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Appearance of the Demon of Dhritarasura. So the idea is the devotee is always interested to use his body in the Lord's service. So, because why take the body? Because the body is the grossest manifestation of our consciousness, right? From the subtle, the body is the subtle manifestation, the gross body is the gross manifestation. So that means there's going to be the most attachment at that point. The consciousness, you have the general concept of, I'm the controller and enjoyer. But that becomes more specified in the subtle body, and then very specific in the gross body. Because the gross body can enjoy, control and enjoy in a particular way, right? The mind has so many ideas and makes plans, and then the polluted consciousness, that is, you know, the sky is the limit, basically. So, if one is willing to give up the body, then that means that the subtle body and the consciousness is automatically included. Right? So the devotee is always willing to do this, because body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. So that's the principle. Unfortunately, also by starting in this way, because if you say consciousness, then we'll go yes, and then we won't necessarily engage the body and mind. Right? But we start with the body, then we have to include the body and mind in that surrender. Because otherwise what happens is that because of this secondary view on life, we always look at what's not the important. We look at the secondary attributes, not the real thing. What's behind it? What makes something function? Right? Like someone comes into someone's house, they have a nice arrangement in the kitchen, and they'll say, fabulous kitchen, right? But do you know if they can cook or not? And that doesn't necessarily matter. They got a great kitchen, right? So, of course, cooking is, it's automatically considered. Everything's considered. The guy's dressed nice, he must be a gentleman, right? He has a nice car, okay, he must be this or that. You understand? So that's the difficulty, is we base everything on the secondary. We don't base it on the primary, The primary is Krishna, serving Krishna. So we see that in rasa. It's a very interesting point. What does sense gratification mean? Sense gratification means that through the medium of what should be rasa, I take sense gratification. Right? Not that I'm experiencing the rasa itself. Right? This is a very interesting point, because we always consider, yes, I'm so much absorbed and so much feelings, emotions, and all these different kinds of things, but well, let us just look at it. Okay, the material world, the basis is sense gratification. So sense gratification means you're going to engage the senses, okay? Now, there's five major ways you can engage the senses, right? Conjugal interaction, parental interaction, friendship interaction, servitorship interaction, and, you know, the neutral position, you know, hence, you know, the tabloids, right? You have the sun because people want to enjoy sense gratification on that neutral point of view, right? So that means is that whatever facility is there in the conjugal rasa for sense gratification, that is what's being tasted. But it doesn't mean conjugal rasa is tasted. As pointed out in the third verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada in the purport talks about in the material world, people actually taste the secondary rasas. Fear, anger, horror, all these different kinds, chivalry, laughter, these things. But the main rasas basically are very inhibited here because we only look at them as mediums for sense gratification. Right? So it's not about the relationship between the two people, it's about what sense gratification these two people can get from each other. If you look at it, analyze it, that's all that's being projected. Right? Conjugal rasa means what sense gratification you can get out of this. It's not about the relationship, husband and wife working together, half of each other's body, the duties that are there, this kind of stuff. That's considered quite archaic. No, it's what enjoyment I can get about it. Otherwise, why break down something that works good, right? Your traditional systems work nicely for relationship. Why break it down? Why say, oh, we don't have to follow all these rules that conduct, you know, men and women's interaction. Why? Because then I can get sense gratification. That's bottom line. It means people like to use nice words and fancy, you know, freedom and equality and all these different kinds of things simply to mask the underlying point that they're simply interested in sense gratification. They're not about to say that. No devotee is going to say that. Even the materialists don't really want to say it. It's too embarrassing. They just don't want to say it. So therefore you have to say, no, but we know we need the, you know, the individual to be able to express themselves, and we need those freedoms, you know, make our choices. What am I saying? I just want to be able to, wherever I can find sense gratification, be able to take it, and I don't want to be restricted. But that particular translation, everyone will go, wow, what a materialist, you know. And so then what devotee wants to do that? So he's going to say, no, I was just thinking, you know, these rules are so old, they don't apply now, it's Kali Yuga, things are changing, you know, as if God's not in control anymore, you know. How does this work? Where's the intelligence in this? Well, that's the point. As it mentioned here, what was the word here? Booyah, again, right? That modern term, booyah, means again, we're absorbed in the material world, right? Yeah. So, this is the bottom line. People don't like to hear this. No one likes to hear this. But, this is reality. So, therefore, parental rasa means what I can get out of it, what I can squeeze from being a parent. Friendship, what do I get from them? The friends make you laugh, it's fun, they're friends. They don't make you laugh and it's fun, they're not friends. Right? That's why Chanakya Pandit says you know who your real friends are when there's adversity. When you lose your money, when you're sick, then you know who your friends are. Otherwise, everybody likes to be around when you're happy and putting out lots of energy and everything like that. But when you're not, hey, There's other places to go, people to see, things to do. Right? Does that make sense? Master-servant. What you can gain from there, the formality and all the things. People like that. You know, sitting there, you know, bowing, clicking the back of their shoes, doing all the thing. You know, it has a taste. So that's what's going on in the material world. So, therefore, that's the perversion of the perversion. The perversion is we follow the rules and regulations because then there's a chance of developing rasa. But this rasa will be what's known as swargiya rasa. What we described before, that's called partiva rasa. It means the rasa of the senses of the material world. Swargiya rasa means the rasas of the mind or the heavenly rasas. Means that it's about the relationship, the feeling between man and woman, parent, child, friend and friend. That kind of thing. You see it now and again, you know, but if it's too much there, people say it gets a little too soppy, right? But, you know, something has to be there so it's not too dry, but not too much, because you wouldn't want to get, you know, over the top here. Right? So, that element, that's based on duties, what you're supposed to do. I'm doing what I should do, the other person appreciates that, I appreciate doing it for them. That's duties. That's the next step. So that's the perverted reflection. Because the actual point is, Vaikuntha rasa means, I'm doing those duties to please Krishna. Mother Yashoda is doing Mother Yashoda stuff to please Krishna. The gopis are doing gopi stuff to please Krishna. Right? The cowherd boys are doing their things to please Krishna. That's Vaikuntha rasa. So it has the proper attitude, proper form. Swargiya rasa means proper form, lacking in attitude. And partiva rasa means lacking in form, lacking in attitude. And that's what's on the billboards these days. So, hey, anyone who wants to take advantage, go for it. But according to Shastra, that is a most unfortunate position. So anybody who gives up the idea of properly doing service, properly doing things, and properly doing to please Krishna, because they think I'm me, I'm being me and all that, they're really sad in position. They're really unfortunate, really immature and really childish, and I don't care how old their body is. They were just talking facts here. Alright? The sages here call these great kings we saw before, last canto. No, earlier this canto. No, it was, I can't remember, whatever. So this king, he's emperor of the world, they're very expert at it. And then Jarabhara calls him immature. Because even though he's good in his duties, so he's good in the swargiya stuff, he still is immature. So let alone partiva rasa. That's kind of like, you know, microbes or something. Doesn't even make it out of the gate. So we have to be clear about this before we get so enthusiastic about all this modern stuff and so willing to give up our traditions because of the opportunities that are there. But the opportunities are just pure, unalloyed sense gratification, that's all. You analyze it, what do you got? Why is there divorce? Because the sense gratification stops. That's all. Irreconcilable differences. Right? The modern person, those are there. Why? There's no sense gratification. Because in the beginning of the marriage, there's sense gratification. Right? For the materialist, for the first 2-3 years, plenty of sense gratification. Marriage lasts. Generally, marriages fall apart after three years. So that means the sense gratification started drying up after 2, and they kind of held on for another year, hoping that maybe something will kickstart. It doesn't, and then they file for a divorce. Right? So, we can see, we're not exaggerating, we're just talking facts, and that's what Bhagavatam's about. Sometimes they're nice, sometimes they're not nice, today they're not nice. Right? So this is the whole idea, is that we have to be very, very careful to not be distracted. Otherwise, that's what we're trading in. Tradition means what's the form that would please Krishna. Giving up that form, why would you give it up except for your own sense gratification? There wouldn't be any other reason. If I can do something proper and I don't, who am I doing it for? Not for Krishna. Now, if that's not available, then hey, you know, it's just like you're traveling in the car, you're driving someplace, you have to stop at the bathroom. You can't get out, take off your shoes, go wash your feet, do the whole thing. There's no facility. So what do? You wash your hands. You know? That's as good as it gets. So you're practical. But when you get home, now you can wash your feet. Right? So the point is, if it's available, why you wouldn't take the higher? And if we take the lower simply because it's good for me, it's me, it's who I am. This is sad. This is just sad. It's not glorious, it's not special, it's not intellectual, it's not liberal. It's not glorious, it's just sad. But by modern political kind of correct things, you don't say stuff like what I'm saying for the last, 20 minutes. Because you want to make everybody feel good and feel inspired and all that, but feel good and inspired about what? Sense gratification. What to do? That's the effect of Kali Yuga. So when you say, yes, things are changing, yes, means I'm allowing myself to be affected by Kali Yuga. That's what's changing. Otherwise, the material world, the laws of nature, the Shastra is exactly the same as it was, a billion years ago. Nothing changed. Bhagavad Gita is still the Bhagavad Gita, whether it was spoken to the sun god, spoken to Arjuna, or having the Bhaktivedanta purport, still the same Gita. Nothing changed. So what's changed? Our consciousness has changed. And more important than our consciousness changed is we like the change. We think it's good. That's the sad part. That's where it becomes sad. So when this becomes common ground, that is what I feel. People have a meeting. Well, I feel this. It doesn't really mean to me. I mean, I feel, I'm this. What is that got? What's going on here? Okay, feelings are there, great, we have feelings, we're people, but are the feelings supposed to be in line with the intelligence, in line with consciousness, or is it just because I feel it? The dog feels like biting your leg off, so is that okay? Hey. So, that's the whole thing, is we fall into this trap because the world around us is doing it, happily. Right? Going to hell in a bucket, right? And they're enjoying the ride, right? And we think, wow, hey, that looks good. Any room in the bucket there? So that's the difficulty. So we have to be very, very careful. So here what's happening is we're learning, and a story is unfolding where Indra, who's interested in sense gratification, but he's basically situated in Swargiya Rasa, but now and again you see he drops right out of the bottom at Partiva Rasa. That's why he has 1,000 eyes or, these other things because of that. But otherwise, when he behaves himself, he's the king of heaven. He does well. But he enjoys being the king of heaven. He likes the position. He likes the power. He likes the authority. And he uses it for Krishna, so that's fine. But it's being compared to pure devotional service, and the interesting part, who's the pure devotee in this story? The demon, right? Vritrasura. Right? And then how is this unfolding? Okay, now how is he going to kill Vritrasura? Right? Because all their weapons didn't work, nothing worked, because Vritrasura is so powerful. Why is Vritrasura so powerful? Because he's a pure devotee. Why are they less powerful? Because they're not as powerful devotees. They're depending on their material power, while Vritrasura is simply surrendered to Krishna. Therefore, he could swallow up the three worlds. Who can do that? Right? Hiranyakashipu couldn't do that, and he's the biggest demon there was. But this demon, who's not considered a big-time demon, right? Because eventually the demigods do kill him, like Hiranyakashipu, no one could kill him, right? So he's not considered, your A grade or A list demon here, right? Does that make sense? He's not going to end up in Hollywood, this one. Maybe in an art house or something, but he's not going to be in an A list, So what's happening? Why he could switch? Because he has that power, because he's a devotee of the Lord. And now here's the fun part. This is where it really gets fun. Is now, how is this going to happen? This is going to happen by taking Dadichi's body and making it into the thunderbolt. Okay? And we think, okay, yeah, cool, he's making his body in thunder. What does that mean? It means Dadichi has to leave his body. He has to give up his body. And who's he giving it up for? Indra. And what's this wonderful relationship between Indra and Dadichi? Right? Dadichi is a sadhu. He's preaching spiritual consciousness. The Ashwini Kumaras go to him for knowledge. He promises he'll teach them transcendental knowledge. Indra says, you teach them transcendental knowledge, I'll cut your head off, because we don't have any other physicians, and if they become sadhus in that, who's going to take care of our bodies here? Right? So the Ashwini Kumaras work it out. Dadichi speaks as transcendental conscious. The Ashwini Kumaras become self-realized. And, amazing enough, they stay doing their jobs. Right? Because they're thinking on transcendental platform, while Indra is still thinking within the material. Devotional, but still karma and jnana, because karma, I do it because the benefit. Jnana, I don't do anything because what's the benefit? He doesn't catch the point of, no, I do it because it pleases Krishna. Right? That's Vaikuntha rasa. So he only understands really up to Swargiya rasa, that I do it, I get the benefit of karma, I do it, I get the benefit of jnana. Or I don't do it and I get the benefit of jnana, right? So now Dadichi has to give up his body, and he's willing to do it. Why? Because he's transcendentally situated, he doesn't care. You know, bodies come and go. And being spiritually and situated like this, Krishna's just making arrangement that Dadichi can go back to Godhead soon. So who goes? Dadichi goes back to Godhead for this pastime. Ritrasura goes back to Godhead. Who gets to stay here? Right? Indra! Yes. So that's the glory. So that's the thing. So his conscience... Oh, it's getting louder. Is this meaning I should talk quieter? Oh, okay. Huh? It's better now. You can hear now. Oh, okay. I mean, I was hearing all along. It sounded fine. That's the problem, right? You know, it's like you keep talking on the phone, the other guy can't tell what you're saying. You know? Okay, so therefore, the point is that the devotee is willing to use everything in Krishna's service. So Dadichi is using his body in the Lord's service because the demigods are supposed to rule the universe, not the demons. So therefore, giving him his body for that purpose is one of the purposes of the Lord. Ritrasura being the demon and all that, but he's a devotee, right? He's been cursed to take as a demon. So therefore, his coming as a demon, he's just doing his demon stuff to please Krishna. That's why he's only just coming and he's an enemy of Indra. So he comes and makes a little trouble there. But you don't see, he doesn't kill anybody. He doesn't, demons normally would take full advantage. But he doesn't. He's out there in the battlefield, they throw their weapons, he yawns, he swallows them. You know, he makes them feel stupid, you know, like that. You know, so the whole point is their materialism, they start to see is not so important. Right? Because his power is coming from spiritual, not from material. Yeah, so then after this, when Vritrasura is killed, then we see is that the spiritual strength, everything of the demigods will come back. One is that because they've followed the Lord's instructions, and they're doing this on the Lord's direction. Therefore, then, the Lord being pleased, everything will come back. And two, because Vritrasura, who's the pure devotee, when he's not present, then naturally the demigods look powerful again. Right? Because that's all they care for, is that their position is maintained. So then, does that make sense? Right? So then like that, when the pure devotee is not there, then the neophytes look good. Right? So then, like that. Okay, so then the final point Prabhupada is making is that the devotee, therefore, is not hindered in his devotional service. Whatever it is, he can always do his devotional service, whether there's facility or not. right? Because the point is whatever you're doing, you do it for Krishna. Like, so we see is Chitraketu, he's a devotee on that platform as a king. He's also a devotee as a demon. So in both places, he's just serving Krishna. Nothing gets in the way. Right? Nothing gets in the way of Dadichi. And we see when he surrenders to the Lord, then nothing gets in Indra's way. Right? Okay? Any questions or comments? Or? No? One of these classes, okay. Yes? There's this funny little... Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Can you hear me, Maharaj?
Yes, I can hear you. I'm sure you can hear yourself. I can hear myself. That's just
Maharaj, there's always a mention of spiritual means spiritual or Vritasura, spiritual. So his weapons are more powerful than the material demigods' weapons.
Yes.
So I'm just trying to understand, is there a spiritual weapons, a set of spiritual weapons? Is there a difference or is it the same, but just that because his devotee is using the weapons?
You have spiritual and you have spiritualized. Spiritual weapons means like the Lord Sudarshan Chakra, his Sharanga bow, his gada, like this. Those are spiritual. But the point is, devotee uses anything in Krishna's service, it becomes spiritualized. Right? Like the body becomes spiritualized. We use it in the Lord's service. Right? In the beginning, we're using the body for ourselves. Right? Then we learn about devotional service, so we start following the rules and regulations and engaging it in the Lord's service. Right? This brings us to the platform of being stable and devotional service. Then, that principle of naishkarmya, or doing it because it's not for my own benefit, but for Krishna's benefit, then becomes stable. Right? Then from that will bring us to the liberated platform. Right? Then from the liberated platform, that will, by practicing devotional service there, that will bring us to prema. You understand? So it's a three-stage program, Kanista, Madhyam, and Uttama. That's why these stages are given, right? So the yoga processes means karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga is how can I engage the body, mind, and words in the Lord's service, right? Karma yoga, the body, jnana yoga, the intelligence, dhyana yoga, and the mind. That combination is buddhi yoga, right? So using that, following that, that makes me steady. Because the whole point is to become steady in devotional service. Because if I'm not steady, I'm sometimes doing devotional service, so sometimes not. So by following the yoga process, it brings me to steadiness. Right? Yoga doesn't have any other purpose than that. That's the whole point of all these yoga systems. In the yoga ladder, it's simply to make one steady. Right? Then if you're steady, then you can engage in the Lord's service. Because if I'm not steady, sometimes I engage in my service, sometimes the Lord's. So then when I'm steady, then I'm able to engage in the Lord's service. When I can engage in the Lord's service steadily, then I can pull the senses in, right? Pratyahara. You understand? So by following the rules and regulations, asana, yama niyama, I become situated, asana, in devotional service properly, right? From that, then pranayama, I can engage this, the life affairs in the Lord's service. I do activities for the Lord. Doing that, I can pull the senses in, pratyahara, and so now I'm not doing it for my own sense gratification. I'm doing it naishkarmya to please the Lord, or at least not for sense gratification. But I do it as devotees for the Lord. Right? Then having done that, now I can absorb myself in thinking of the Lord. That's how the yoga process works. Right? So all these mechanical things that these different systems have are only to bring you to the point of being steady. Like that. So we do it without having to, you know, all this pretzel work and stuff like that. You know, that doesn't mean that the Germans have a problem. It just means that, you know, better to eat pretzels and be tied up like one, right? Okay? Is that okay? Yeah? Something else? Yes? That. Hey, just give it to me. Thank you.
It is mentioned in this verse that devotee envies nobody.
Devotee
doesn't envy anybody.
Devotee,
especially
doesn't.
Another devotee.
Yes,
we see in case of Indra.
Right.
It's otherwise.
That's because he's not a pure devotee. Because, see, when we say devotee, you have two kinds: pure devotee and mixed devotee, as we mentioned. So pure devotee means it's just about pleasing Krishna. Mixed devotee means there's the element of our own pleasing our own conditioning, right? You know, it means I'm in this particular, you know, how you say, physical, psychological position, and so I take care of that for myself. I'm also giving it to Krishna, so that's renunciation. Does that make sense? It means it's mine, I give it to Krishna. I make money, it's my money, I worked hard, I give it to Krishna. Sannyas means it's Krishna's money, but I'm performing my duty in my position. I'm supposed to make money, so I make money for Krishna. Right? And then I take care of Krishna's expenses. Right? Because I'm taking the responsibility of this money, but it's actually Krishna's money. So that's renunciation. That's sannyas. That's pure devotee. So here what we see is that Vritrasura is the pure devotee, and Indra is the neophyte. The demigods tend to be neophytes, that's what it mentions. Those who are neophytes, if they leave their body and don't think of Krishna somehow or another, then they end up as demigods. Right? So that's the position. So they're devotees. There's no demigod who's not a devotee. Otherwise, are you going to give management of the universe to just some guy? You know? Definitely not the demons. You know, but just neutral. No, they'll be devotees. They're all devotees. But sometimes they have to be, you have to do some extra work to remind them. You know, like Krishna has to lift Govardhan on hill for 7 days on his, you know, pinky of his left hand, you know, and he's a little kid. Then you put all that together, and then suddenly Indra goes, okay, well, who can do, how many eight-year-olds can do that? You know? Like that, and for 7 days, and on the left hand, on the little finger, you know, so you put it all together, and you kind of go in Vrindavan, and Krishna comes in Vrindavan, and then, oh, bingo, right, okay, it's Krishna. You know, it takes him 7 days, but the point is in 7 days, he works it out and surrenders, so that makes him a devotee. So they're doing important work, just like management of the universe is important work. But more important than management of the universe is the knowledge of the soul, knowledge of devotional service. So, like Indra makes the same mistake, generally managers have a tendency to make exactly the same mistake. They think management is what makes devotional service happen. If I didn't manage, there would not be devotional service. But we're sorry to say, no. If you don't have devotional service, you don't have devotional service. Management just makes it go easier. Otherwise, if you go back in time, how many teenagers were great managers, especially when they didn't pay attention in school, didn't go to management school, and a good chance they might have even flunked out of school. And they're going and managing the whole society and making all kinds of preaching things happen. How did that happen? Because they're great managers? No, because they got bhakti. Now, if we try to replace that with management skills, then you're left with whatever actual material management skills you have. And how many managers are there? If you have a group of 100 people, how many are managers? Like that. So that's the whole point, is then it gets even more sad, because it's devotionally weak and materially a disaster. So it's like, you know, hey, what's the benefit? You understand? So the point is you have the mixed and pure. So mixed means there's an aspect of pure, because we don't have that the devotional service is mixed. No, devotional service is mixed with something material. So it's real devotional service. So any devotee who performs any devotional service, it's real. But at the same time, they're cultivating material desires at the same time. That's the mix. Does that make sense? So it's not that the devotional service is, there's a problem. It's just that it's not steady. So sometimes it's there, we go, there's a kirtan, and one's absorbed in pure devotional service. And then after the kirtan, you know, you get a message on your phone, it reminds you of something, then you forget everything, and then go off in something else. So that's where the mix comes. But when you come to the point where one's steady, as we said, yoga is to bring you to the point of steady, then it's always in devotional service. Now, sometimes it's more intense, there's more taste, more attachment, and sometimes there's less, but at least it's stable. So that's then considered that's the recommended platform to function from. That's where it's considered, now this is where devotional service becomes advanced. So someone on the platform of Nishta, that's advanced devotional service. Because before that, being unsteady, you don't quite know what will happen. You know, one day it's really good, one day it's not. One situation is really good, the next day, same situation, it's not. Right? So that's why yoga is there to create stability, because every day you do the same kind of things, you're exposed to the same amount of spirituality every day. Right? One's activities are regulated, so you don't do anything too crazy. And then the effect of the spiritual starts to have it come in, and then over the time, day by day, moment by moment, then it increases till it comes to the platform of pure devotion. Right? Then it's perfect. Then it doesn't matter what position you're in. You know, you're a big, big manager like Dhruva Maharaj, or you're a big, big demon like Vritrasura. They're all just absorbed in the Lord. So that's the point, is it doesn't matter what you're doing, but it has to be connected to the Lord. Right? That's the hope, okay? Does that make sense? Yes.
Jai Ho. Hare Krishna Maharaj. I'd like to ask some questions about the swallowing of the weapons.
The swallowing of the weapons.
Yeah. For example, we know that Shiva has this weapon called the Shiva Jora. And it's got three eyes and three legs. And it runs around and it burns everything, right? So it's some kind of conscious being, the weapon itself. And then we have Varuna. He has his nooses and they tie up Lakshman. And once you get tied up by the nooses of Varuna, that's it. No one can get free. It's kind of like an invincible weapon. And then when Garuda comes, they finally run away because Garuda can eat the snakes like that. Okay. So, I'm, you know, because it seems like if he swallowed the weapon, then you just go, well, go make another weapon. What's the big deal? So my question is, are these weapons all conscious beings? That's the first question. Second question is, what is the relationship between the demigods and their weapons that they would get so wimped out after they were swallowed? And do they feel powerless when they don't have their weapons? And fourthly is, how do they get their weapons back after they were swallowed, because we know that, for example, Varuna has his nooses, Shiva has his Shiva Jora. I don't know all the demigods' different weapons, but mm-hmm. There's probably many, and they're all unique, and they're supposed to be all invincible, right, in some way or another. So yeah, these are the questions. I'm kind of fascinated by this swallowing of the weapons.
The swallowing of the weapons. See, the post of the demigod is a particular is the manifestation of a specific potency of Krishna to accomplish a particular task. So that task is accomplished through that demigod, because it's a universal form. So the universal form is the subtle aspect. Vishwarupa is the gross of the subtle, in that you have specific forms defined. But Brahma manifests these gross forms. And so through that, then these potencies are established. You know, you can see them, the work gets done. So along with each demigod comes all his, whatever goes with him. Right? So his particular form, his position, his powers, his chariot, you know, what prayers, you know, his weapons, everything goes, it's a package. So because of identifying with it, then it's a problem. So if they lose something, then they feel bad because that's part of their scene. So then, but for the devotee, these are just things they use in the Lord's service because it's all the Lord's potency. So if they're there or not there, it doesn't bother them because their identity as servant to Krishna remains. So that's why then the pure devotees won't have that problem. Right? So that would be one aspect, and that's the relationship position. Because it's an empowered thing, then you'll generally see is that these are not... they can have many forms to manifest through, because it's a particular potency, just like Arjuna can take an arrow and invoke an astra into it, or you can even take a blade of grass, you know, and put the weapon. He was walking along carrying a torch, you know, they were going down to the Ganga. And it was at night, so you're not supposed to bathe at night generally. But the Ganga can be approached at night anyway. And the Gandharva was there with his family and that, because it's their time. The reason we can't bathe at night is because that's the Gandharva's time. When the Brahma Muhurta comes, that's our time again. Right? So twilight's our time, and Brahma Muhurta, and in between, that's the, you know, Gandharvas and everybody else, that's their time. So they're approaching the Ganga, and then he gets attacked by him. And so he just chants mantras on his torch, throws the torch at the demigod of the Gandharva, and it burns his chariot to ashes, and he just falls headlong out of the sky onto the ground. And he just picks him up, drags him by his hair over the Yudhishthira, and says, "Okay, what do you want to do with this guy?" You know, so, like that, they become great friends. Right, and so then I think he learns from him when he goes to the heavenly planets. Indra suggested he learn from him, you know, music and dance, like that. So it was from him. So you can put it into anything. So the form of it, so it's got its natural form, but then you have to redo. Now there are those ones that are personified. That's Shiva's, like that. The other ones, it's not that they necessarily had a separate form. Shiva's has, Sudarshan has. Like that, you can see as Arjuna when he called the weapon. He can see which particular demigod it is. Like I think it was when Meghnath. He shot a Brahmastra at Hanuman, and because he could see it was Brahma, so he can see the demigod. He doesn't just see the gross form of the weapon. He sees the demigod behind it. So he's standing there offering respects. So then the Brahmastra just ties them up in ropes, right? And so, you know, just so that they would feel they defeated him. Otherwise, then they'd really get bent out of shape, because it's Ram who was going to come and defeat. So you have the aspect where the potency of the demigod is there, and that can be seen. But the personified, then you only hear about that with the Shiva Jwar, Narayana Jwar, and like this, on that level. The Purushas, they have that. Everybody else in Prakriti, they have empowered weapons. So if he swallows them, then they'll, you know, get some more. Is that okay? Yeah? Because the point is he'll just swallow those also. See, it's one thing is they throw it, and he's fighting, and this and that. He's got some technique. And so then if somebody has good technique and you have good technique, there's an idea, yes, I can maybe defeat the guy if I work hard enough. But if the guy just yawns, not even sits there and, like this, he just yawns, like, you know, like how boring, and just swallows the weapons. And it's not like they make a dent in the back of his neck or something, you know, something poking out the side and can't swallow properly. And excuse me. You know, no, none of that. Just swallows the weapons as if, you know, it was a cream puff or something. You know, so then, you know, that's going to throw you off. Is that okay? Okay, sorry. And here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki. Jainatai Gaur Premanandi.